Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
My sound is really loud.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sound great to me.
It sounds really loud, just like at home, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of an echo.
You don't even have to say
echo,
what. All right. So you can always find everything about us on our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us and .net and .org and all that. Just not .com.
No, they took .com away.
I couldn't, and they're wasting it. They're not even using it. Losers.
Yeah.
So sponsor this hour.
Team Power.
Comes to you from Bill.
That's right.
Hit it, Bill.
Yeah, Team Power, local John Deere Kubota dealer. If you're looking for a great deal on a tractor, stop by and see them out there on Twin View Boulevard, and they can make you a good deal on a John Deere Kubota tractor. Also, right now, they're running their winter service special, so if you've got a tractor of pretty much any make and you need it serviced, checked out for the season.
And don't wait till it's the day you want to mow your grass.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, because you guys do a lot of mowers.
Oh, we do a ton of mowers. We'll have...
Because they're the mower guys.
Yeah, busy time of the year, you'll see 30, 40 mowers out there getting worked on. So yeah, right now is a great time. Not a huge wait. Bring it in. They'll get fixed up for you and have it running like a new one. So that's Team Power at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, out there next to Phil's Propeller. And you can give them a call at 226-9226. Team Power.
Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
There you go.
Hey, and if you want a little pedal tractor, like if you know somebody who has a kid who's really into tractors, they have these two really cute, well, actually you have three of them, Kubota pedal tractors, like the kind we used to mess around with when we were kids. One's metal.
Yeah, one's the cast metal, and the other
so
one's
for like the tough kid.
And yeah, yeah.
For
and
the
that
kid
one,
wants...
you'll never wear that one
no.
out. Chain drive, I mean, that thing you can go out and...
But for
the kid
who wants to do more stuff, it's got a loader and a trailer. And
it's anyway, a cute little rig.
Pretty fun.
Yeah, stop by.
Those
are guests today.
That is all. Those are all the announcements I can think of. Except that our archives are free of charge. And actually, I don't usually point that out because I thought everybody's were. But apparently, a lot of people now are putting their information on the web with their archives from podcasts and whatnot, and they charge to listen. You can always listen to our stuff free, and it has the commercials pulled out. So we celebrate capitalism during the show, and then we take out the capitalism so you can listen to it in a shorter time frame. But those archives date all the way back to 2010. Lots of topics. You will have no shortage of things to listen to. And a web page is created for each program. So stuff we talk about, we add all the links on there. And,
Tell a friend. Tell a friend.
Kind of a full information sort of deal.
Yeah, share the information with somebody. Just give them that website and have them log on.
All righty. So our guest today is Peter Friedman. We spoke with him for an hour last week. And I don't know. I guess I don't know if it was on his bio. I'm going to say it wasn't. I'm going to blame him. Are you in there, Peter?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to know you, make sure you knew I was blaming you. I didn't know you did stuff with the FBI back in the day. So since the FBI is so much in the, thick of it these days, you said, hey, let's talk about the FBI the first hour. It's like, okay. So we don't know anything, but I did find some fun music that involves like spying in the FBI. So that's my contribution today.
Yeah, we kind of wonder, with the FBI in the news so much lately, was it that way when you were involved? It seems very politicized.
Well, no, actually, it wasn't politicized. It was just incompetent. That's kind of what FBI stands for me. Famous but incompetent.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy, it sure looks that way nowadays. I mean, a lot of folks are saying, hey, there's, the rank and file are good, hardworking people, and I'm sure a lot of them are. But, gosh, there's just a lot of bad stuff we've been hearing about, and that is the rank and file. So tell us what's going on there.
Well, what did Lord Acton say? Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yep.
And one of the... stories that I have, I did an undercover op that I was the technical advisor for back in 1990 to 1993, and I also worked as the technical advisor to Senator Cohn's two subcommittees back in 94 on counterfeit and bogus parts in the airline industry. found 39% of the ones that the FAA was using to maintain their own aircraft back there in Oklahoma City were defective.
And then
this is something else we can talk about maybe the next time, but the committee report, it was a Senate hearing, again, with Senator Cohn in April of 96 on whether or not FAA inspectors were properly trained, targeted, and supervised, which is, they're both on the Internet. It makes very interesting reading, and you'll probably never fly commercial again. But,
we talked to a pilot one time in an airport, and that scared us enough.
Yeah, well, all our flights were late. We got a little extra info.
My own airplane, and I've been a flight instructor, I think you could see from my bio, since 1977. But FBI, so I was in the contracting business, manufacturing parts since 1965, mainly for the military. And you know, you get these government contracts, you bid against other people, most of whom are not terribly honest, cut corners and stuff like that, which wound up being the subject of this investigation. So finally, in 1989, there was a bogus bolt scandal involving the Bradley tank that was being manufactured in San Jose, California by FMC Corporation, which stands for Food Machinery Corporation. There was a 2020 expose in late 89 about the bolts that were not produced correctly by this company in Texas called Aircom. They had gone to Taiwan. They had bought them in Taiwan, and they were the wrong material and everything. And so I got contacted at that time by 2020, and met Brian Ross of the current, yeah, anyway.
He didn't touch you, did he?
Yeah, anyway, that's a whole other story. And they said, you know, you want to tell us all about this problem, because what was happening was the heads of the bolts on the tanks were blowing off at night after they had been torqued down and tightened, and people thought it was gunfire. So obviously the cops were out there, the cops notified DOD and the Army, and they investigated and they found that these bolts were actually counterfeit bolts and wrong material and everything. They went after this company. So during the course of this, I had mentioned to several of the investigators, I said, well, this is nothing new. You know, this goes on all the time. Oh, really? Well, tell us more. So I did, and then in 1990, I came from Los Angeles up to the Bay Area because there were a couple of investigators for DOD down in L.A. who were, let's say, making evidence disappear. Mm-hmm. And so I told them, look, I'll be happy to help you. I said, but you're going to have to, you know, put me with, you know, somebody who's honest. And they actually found somebody. It was very interesting. Because the government, the Department of Defense Inspector General's Office had just created, just months before, the Defense Criminal Investigative Service, DCIS. So I met with DCIS, this agent, and an FBI agent out of San Francisco with the assistant U.S. attorney over there, and laid all this stuff out for him and told him exactly what I thought a sting operation should be and how to go about doing it, because by that time I'd already been in the business for, I don't know, 30 years or so. So they decided that they were going to put a sting operation together, and it was called Operation Pro Fraud. And what we did was we rented an office over in San Leandro, right next to Otis Spunkmeyer cookies, so we got to have all the cookies we wanted.
That's the upside of the investigation. Hold that thought, Peter. We have to celebrate capitalism here for 2 minutes, and we will come right back. Our guest today is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll be right back. get you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about it?
But was it Brian Ross?
Yeah, but we don't need cameras in our house, do we? Gosh, I hope not.
You know, that was a fun song to listen to last night. I'm like, oh, that'll be fun tomorrow. It was. So that's you, Peter.
Okay, I'll cut to the chase.
Well, it's okay. I mean, now that we said you spied for the FBI, I mean, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. Anyway, so here was the problem. The FBI had to fund our sting operation. DOD didn't have the money for doing that. So the FBI gave us $300,000 to put this sting operation together to go after people who were selling defective aircraft parts to the military. So part of the consideration to get the money was we had to have an FBI agent on our team, which we didn't want to have. But however, they were going to be there, and they were going to keep an eye on the money. That was the idea. So we set up this little office, and we put cameras in there and tape recording equipment, and we invited, dealers, parts dealers and stuff to come in there. We taped them and got them on tape saying, well, we'll give you whatever kind of certifications for the parts you want. Ultimately, we bagged 19 companies.
Holy cow.
We have this FBI agent with us, and I'm not going to mention any names. He's probably retired by now, but still. So the DCIS agent and I wired ourselves up, and little tape recorders and a little microphone coming out of our watch band. And we went down to Southern California, and we went into a company in Van Nuys. And we're in there, and we introduced ourselves. We had phony business cards, and we introduced ourselves as part of this group called All Pacific Services, and how we had inside track, for example, in Honolulu with the Air Force and the Navy to supply, parts to them. And, did you want to do some business with us? So we're sitting in the owner's office, and the FBI guy is sitting with us, and he has this little vinyl briefcase, and he keeps lifting the briefcase up and thrusting it forward because he's got his little tape machine inside the briefcase.
It's all about the quality of recording.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I have to go back and give you the prequel to this. So we go down to Burbank Airport from Oakland, and we rent a car at Hertz. And we rent a car, it was a Seville, Cadillac Seville, so that we would look like we were, really affluent parts dealers. So we rent a black Cadillac Seville, drive over to this place, and the guy from the FBI, he's sitting in the back seat, and he's about 5'6". And the agent, DCIS agent, and I are sitting in the front seat, and we're just chatting about our approach to the owner of this company before we go in there. So I'm in the passenger seat, and we're parked across the street, and the next thing I see is the FBI agent get out of the car, stand right there by the back door in full view of everybody, and with a 35-millimeter camera, and he's taking pictures of the business across the street. So I asked the agent, is he supposed to be doing that? And he turned around, and I won't say what he said because we're on air, throws open his door, grabs the guy, and he throws him across the back seat. Now, the business across the street has this big roll-up door at the sidewalk. And right inside the door are a bunch of guys that are packaging parts. So they are now trying to figure out why somebody across the street's taking their picture. So the inspector general agent, we'll call him Mike. Anyway, so Mike throws the other guy across the back seat, slams the door, gets in the car, starts the car, drives up about two blocks, throws it into park, reaches around, grabs the FBI agent by his shirt, pulls him up between our two seats in the front, and starts screaming at him, "If you ever do something like that again, I'm going to break both your legs. Why were you doing that?" And this FBI guy says, "Well," he says, "we always want to take pictures of the target company for the file."
Wow.
Yeah, okay. So what happened was we drove back to Burbank Airport. This was 10 o'clock in the morning. We go back to Burbank Airport. We go back to Hertz. We swapped the black car for a white car. Okay? We called the owner, said, you know, our flight was delayed, and we can't be there till 1 o'clock. So everything is fine. Now we come about 10 minutes to 1 back to the company. We don't park across the street. We park right in front of the business with the white car now, and we go inside. Now we're sitting there in the owner's office, and the FBI guy decides he needs to go to the bathroom. So the owner of the company says, "All right, go out of the office here, turn left, and it's the second door down the hall." So he gets up, and he goes down the hall. So we're sitting there with the owner of the company for about 15 minutes talking, and finally the owner, you know, says, "Gee whiz," he says, "you know, your friend's been in there for an awful long time. I hope he's okay." So Mike looks at me, and he says, "Go check on him." So I got up and I walked out there and I knock on the door to the bathroom and I said, "Hey, you okay in there?" He said, "Who is this?" I said, "It's Peter."
"Dave's not here, man."
Yeah.
Totally.
So he opens the door a little bit, okay, about 3 or 4 inches. And I said, "You okay in there?" He says, "I need a coat hanger." I said, "What are you, constipated or something?" "No." He says, "I dropped my gun in the toilet."
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. You can't even make this up.
You couldn't. You absolutely can't. He says, "I dropped my gun in the toilet." He says, "I need to get a wire coat hanger so I can bend it, so I can grab it. It's stuck in the bottom of the toilet, okay, in the trap. So I can pull it out of there."
Geez, what was he carrying, a pea shooter?
Wait a minute.
Wait for it.
Don't get ahead of it. So I go back to the owner's office, and the owner says, "Hey, is he okay?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "But he needs a coat hanger." And so Mike turns around, of course, and he says, "Well, is he constipated?" And I said, "No.
Tried that one.
He dropped his wedding ring in the toilet."
Oh, good call.
"And he's got to figure it out." Okay, so he gives me the coat hanger. I go back, knock on the door, opens the door a little bit. I get in the coat hanger, and I'm hanging on to the hanger. And he's trying to take it from me. He says, "Give me the hanger." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "If you're going to start fishing that gun out of the toilet," I said, "then make sure when you hook it, you don't hook it on the trigger and shoot the toilet." Okay, so you asked the question, what was he carrying? He was carrying a Smith & Wesson Model 36 5-Shot Chief Special. Okay, so a few minutes later, he fished it out. He comes back, and he put it into his sport coat pocket instead of back in his leather pancake holster. You know, he didn't want to get the holster wet.
So he has this perfect water outline.
Absolutely.
Of a firearm. Oh, my God.
He comes walking in, and here he's printing. The gun is printing in his right-hand pocket of his cotton sport coat.
Yeah.
So about that point, I saw that. I jumped up, and I moved over to him, put my arm around him, and I said, "Okay, great. Glad to see you found the ring and everything." Butting up against him so that the owner of the business couldn't see the printing of the revolver. And I said, "You know, We got a plane to catch. Sounds to me like we have everything we need, and we'll get back to you. So the three of us go out, and we get into the car. Mike starts the car. He pulls the car two blocks down the street, throws it in the park, reaches around, grabs the guy in the back seat, and yanks him up between the two seats in the front again. He says, "What the hell were you thinking?" He says, "Why in the world are you carrying a firearm?" Well, because at the FBI, he says, when we're on a case, we're always supposed to be armed. And I'm going, this is white collar. This is, you know, nothing. Well, we got to shoot the pictures, and I'm supposed to be armed. So Mike tells him, you know, "If you ever do that again, I will take it from you, and I will shoot you in both kneecaps with it."
I'm surprised he didn't shoot the toilet. That really...
Oh, my God. Oh, that, I was afraid. I was listening for the noise.
Good call, though. I would have never thought of that.
That's my first thought, was he hooks the trigger and then shoots through the toilet.
Yeah.
Kills the toilet.
Yeah.
So that's one of the stories. We had to deal with this guy for 2 years.
Oh.
Was he a rookie guy, or had he been on the force for a while?
Yeah, was he supposed to be an experienced guy, or was he new?
Oh, no, he was an experienced guy.
Oh, bummer.
I mean, he had been with the Bureau for, you know, 15 years, I think.
Wow.
CPA. Okay, you've got to be either an attorney or a CPA to be picked up by the Bureau. So if you have a CPA that is trying to do, you know, white collar, whatever, it has no clue. Had absolutely no clue, and we spent 2 years trying to explain the fraud to him, and he just couldn't figure it out. Well, did the parts work? That's not the point.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So
this is like the Pink Panther.
It's Clouseau.
Yeah. It's Clouseau.
Absolutely Clouseau.
Great story.
Oh my God! Wow, that just makes you want to pull your eyelashes out.
Unbelievable.
All right. So need to take a quick break here. Okay. Let's take a quick break and we'll fast forward when we come right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. We usually talk to him about Islam. We're going to talk about refugees in the second hour, but this hour, chatting about some FBI stuff. We'll be right back.
Somebody's always watching.
Maybe the private eyes are, but the FBI's not. They're fishing their guns out of the toilet.
Maybe they need to subcontract out the FBI, get some local yokels on the job, and get some crime solved.
Well, we had a big heist out at the airport here not so long ago, within the last year or so.
Reading International Airport?
Yeah, where the baggage claim, or the little baggage turnaround is like 9 feet long.
Yeah.
But the FBI couldn't be bothered to look into it, or wouldn't look into it, or anyways, very frustrating.
Oh, got a better one for you.
Oh, good.
Okay, so fast forward, summer 2000. I'm working as a VP of quality over at Oakland Airport, and there's a flight school next to us. Now, I think you saw from my CV, I just got the 50-year award from the FAA for living long enough in aviation to get it.
Yeah, Master Mechanic Award, 50-year.
There you go. So I'm also a flight instructor. I've got 3,000 hours. I've flown everything up to and including a G4 Gulfstream 4. All right, so the summer of 2000, I'm at Oakland Airport. And there's a guy on our line service, okay, that moves airplanes around and fuels them and stuff like that. And the guy's name is Muhammad. So immediately, you know, I'm interested. So I go out on the ramp, and I talk to Muhammad, nice kid. Turns out he's taking flying lessons at the flight school next door. So I asked him who his instructor was, because I was on the curriculum advisory board for the school. So he tells me who the instructor is. So I go and I talk to the instructor, ask him how this guy is doing. He says, well, this is a really strange guy. He says, he's really not so interested
in landing,
in landing the plane.
No! Oh.
And it's like, what?
Yeah.
He says, yeah. He says, he's got about 20 hours. He says, and I've been working with him, and he has more fun, okay, flying around in the air and manipulating the controls and everything and doing turns and climbing and descending and stuff. But landing really makes him nervous, and he's not interested in that. He's just interested in being in the air and flying around. So I call the FBI office in San Francisco. Now, these are the same guys that I already knew from years before. And I said, you know me, all right? And you really ought to come over here and let me tell you what's going on here. So a couple days later, I get two newbies. One is a guy who's been with the Bureau for maybe less than a year, and he brings the girl along with him, brand new agent. She's been an agent now for 2 months. And I'm trying to explain the situation to him, and they don't understand. Well, maybe he just needs to have additional instruction, you know, and I'm going, look, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, all right, and I really think you ought to do a background on this kid because there's something here that's not right. So we fast forward to 9/11 now, the following year, and it turns out that this kid was one of these support people for the 19 hijackers.
Wow.
Holy cow.
So after that occurs, the end of the week after 9/11, the end of that week, I went on the FAA's website. Now, this is very interesting. If you go to FAA.gov, and on the right-hand side, you can... On the menu bar, it will say Airman Certification. So if you click on that, and then it has a little drop-down menu, and it says Search Airman. And you click on that. Now, you get a page with a bunch of fields in it to do a search. So what I did was I put in first the word Muhammad. And I got about 20 pages where the FAA had issued pilot's licenses and mechanic's licenses to people named Muhammad. Then I put in Rashid, and then I put in Ahmed. I wound up with about 70 pages of people that had taken either mechanic instruction, flight instruction here, had foreign addresses. I punched them, put it in a three-ring binder, and I called these monkeys over across the bay again, and I said, you know, I have something here for you. I don't know whether you are aware that you can do this. So these guys came back over, and I gave them the binder, and they said, oh, my God, this is great. Where did you get this?
No.
I said, I got it on the FAA's website. Oh, wow. Well, we had no idea that was available. Okay.
Okay.
So all of our paranoia is unfounded.
Yes. Never heard from them again. Never heard from him again.
No kidding.
Yep.
That's fairly scary. And here, you know, there's, I don't know. The FAA here, I'm going to say locally, it's the northern part of the state. There's a little airport up there just outside of Tule Lake. And it's part of it's on the site of an old internment camp, one of the Japanese internment camps. And
yep.
So anyway, the internment camp has a, you know, 37-acre site for a, you know, tell the story monument type of thing, which is
right,
larger than Pearl Harbor, we should point out. But they have decided that they want the airport. I mean, they want the airport taken out. And here's the FAA supposed to be helping the people that are running the airport, the city and the county, put some fencing around it, because all it is old split rail fence. It's all down around the airport. The deers run out on the runway and stuff like that.
Yep.
FAA is actually helping to tangle it up with the Japanese and make it harder for the airport folks to put in a fence. They've been no help whatsoever.
Yep, and they'll use airway trust fund money to do it too, which is our tax money.
Yeah, it's been crazy. Who would think? I mean, their job is aviation, and they've said right straight along, well, we have no interest in taking the airport out because it's in a strategic location. Besides the fact that all of the crops there on the Klamath project, so you've got $600+ million of agriculture that's all sprayed from that airport. It's one of the largest employers in the area in that area. It's not that many people, but it's a large employer, and they're doing nothing to help these guys secure their airport and fight back the encroachment of this group. It's crazy.
So as far as the FBI goes, is I would assume, which gets me in trouble every time, that they have to go through regular training updates and field training and such. Is that the case? I mean, it's really hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that here we have the FBI, which is supposed to be the premier law enforcement agency in the country, just getting all this bad press. And from what I'm hearing, a lot of it is justified. And it's been going on now, it sounds like, for a long time, and people just haven't been really aware of it. Is that the case?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. You remember ever since J. Edgar Hoover passed away, but you remember the O.J. Simpson trial back in 94?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they proved down there in court legitimately that the FBI laboratory had made a number of mistakes in identifying blood spatter and all kinds of stuff. And that was one of the ways that, unfortunately, the jury decided to let O.J. go.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes all the way back to the laboratory, and it just, again, you know, FBI, famous but incompetent.
Yeah, it just doesn't give you very much confidence or faith in the system when you have the FBI, the DOJ, at the top of the ladder, administering justice for folks like you and me. We get into this system for whatever reason. I kind of feel like I'm a tiny fish in a big pond. There, I'm going to get mowed over by incompetence, and there's not a whole lot I can do about it.
Pretty much. I would say that's probably accurate. You know, the FBI agents really are you know, government trained, just the way the deputies were down in Parkland who didn't run into the school.
Right.
Coward County?
Yeah.
Not good.
You don't hide behind your patrol car. I was a deputy for 5 years, and I can tell you right now, I was a pilot for San Bernardino County. And we were doing all kinds of drug interdiction and everything. And, you know, I mean, that's you either accept the job or you don't. And if you're not going to do the job, then find something else to do because you're putting lives at risk.
Yeah, and you know, and in fairness to the deputies, you can train for that type of scenario all day long, but until it happens, you're not sure how you're going to react. But when it happens, you got to pull it together and make it happen is right. And that wasn't the case, doesn't sound like.
Well, that's supposedly what we learned from Columbine. Because in Columbine, what they did, since that hadn't happened before, they set up the usual perimeter, waited for the SWAT team to show up, you know, and right after that, they changed the entire paradigm for an active shooter. I do a lot of active shooter programs for businesses and, families and private individuals and stuff. And what really bothered me about the thing in Florida was we're teaching these kids to, you know, run and hide rather than be able to assess the situation and then take some proactive position as opposing to just, you know, waiting and trying to hide and be quiet and hoping that the alligator will eat them last.
Right, right. And that is a situation that, you know, I wouldn't wish on anybody. You don't know how you're going to react in the face of somebody mowing everybody down with a gun, and you don't have a gun. But that, again, is another issue that we need to fix in these schools. There has to be, well, they had armed security at this school.
Yeah,
but,
I was going to say, the security thing.
Yeah, the whole, you know, their argument is, well, we don't want our kids to feel like, you know, they're in an armed or a security state or whatever. But, you know, we have them in banks. We have them in airports.
We have to take a really quick break before we wind up on that. And then we can hit that because you have been a firearms instructor for over 50 years. So I think you're probably qualified to speak to that topic. Our guest, Peter Friedman, you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
That's what we need at the school.
Well, I think the FBI is trained in mind reading.
Yeah, they are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, dealing with fools. That's the part Peter learned about.
They look you right in the eye and laser beam you, and you're all
done.
That's it. You can't lie.
It's over.
Yeah.
True story. So, okay, after 50 years of firearms instruction, what's your thought for the school situation?
Well, watching all this stuff now for almost 2 weeks, it just fascinates me over and over and over again. That, you know, we protect banks, we protect airports, we protect
exactly
everything, you know, with firearms. We do not protect our schools. And especially here in California, it's just unbelievable. I've got three grandkids. They go to school up here in the Bay Area. And every time I'm over at their school, there's two different schools and they're wide open. They're not fenced off. They're absolutely wide open. Anybody can come in there. There's a sign saying, please check in at the office.
Or not.
Well, plus they're gun-free zones, and they you know, post that so everybody can see it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was going to put a sign on my front lawn because I've got a liberal neighbor. And I was going to put a sign on my front lawn with a big arrow saying, he has no guns.
Somebody did make one of those signs. It was something about,
it was,
you know,
a big sign. I saw that.
Yeah, remember
like
that?
4x8 sign.
Yeah, my neighbor has no guns. Rob his house.
Yep. Go there first.
It just, people don't understand. You know, a fat person is going to blame the spoon for them gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put the spoon down.
Well, it is crazy that. We don't have somebody armed in all of our schools. You know, and in the past, I don't think it was really necessary. Nobody even thought about going in and doing this. But now that it's become this thing.
And you get so much notoriety.
And you get all this notoriety. Yeah. I mean, we've got to change that because they are a target now.
Well, we also got to find out what kind of drugs this kid was on.
Yeah.
We know that in Columbine, Dylan and the other guy were on these psychotropic drugs. You know, I mean, that's just something that has occurred now within the last two generations. You know, what has changed? All right, we didn't have this before. Why are we having this now? And then you discover that the schools recommend Ritalin and Adderall and stuff like that on kids that are actually, for the most part, very bright. And they get bored in school because they're teaching to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
And so you've got to keep these other kids, you know, occupied and interested. You know, otherwise that exacerbates the problem. Now, I'm not a crazy gun nut person. As far as I'm concerned, being an NRA training counselor and law enforcement firearms instructor and everything, when people go to buy a firearm, I would recommend strongly that they have at least 4 hours of actual on the range training with a certified instructor. So that's one of the things that I've been pushing forever, because I work with several gun stores here in the Bay Area as an instructor, and I'm fascinated by the fact that, you know, a husband will bring their wife in, a boyfriend brings the girlfriend in, and they get them a little, you know, five-shot Smith revolver or something like that, with no training whatsoever. And then, you know, most of the time, it's an accidental thing that will occur. But, you know, training is a big part of it. Now, if you get a person, and, you know, this reminds me of Chris Kyle, okay? If you go back to the movie and what happened to him, if you remember, and he was the American
yeah.
Sniper, the
right.
movie, and... You know, he decided to get out of Iraq and whatever and come back here, and he was going to work with vets. And it was a vet who had very serious PTSD who killed him. I mean, just, you know. But as an instructor, I have seen people come through who, yes, have legally been able to have a firearm, but then I have turned them down for instruction. And I have told people with them, this person really should not have a firearm, you know, because they are not looking at it as another power tool, which is what it is. It's a power tool like a bandsaw or an electric drill that requires that same amount of training, if you will, and it doesn't suffer negligence very well. And so when I train people, I start out by asking them, hey, you know, do you use a drill at home? Yeah, well, would you drill a hole through something holding the something in your left hand while you're running the drill through with your right hand? No, I would never do that. Why? Because I would drill a hole through my hand. Hello? Yes, okay, now you have a firearm. And you take a look at the pointy end, and you're going to have a projectile coming out of that thing under 30,000 pounds of pressure. When a 9mm ignites in the chamber, it generates 30,000 pounds of pressure. So I always ask them, you know, what kind of a car did you come here today in? And it's, you know, a Toyota or it's a Chevy or whatever. I said, so you got a 3,000-pound car. And when you press the trigger on that gun, you are generating 10 times the weight of the car that you drove here in. And you ought to see the size of their eyes at that
yeah.
point. I have no idea.
I was going to say, that's a really
yeah.
good visual.
That's not even going to slow down when it contacts your
well,
body.
Well, concealed weapons are fairly difficult to get in your county, aren't they? I mean, our county is pretty, you know, our sheriff doesn't require you to, you know.
Yeah, you're in a Chalicue County. I'm in a May issue county. So here we have an excellent sheriff, David Livingston, and he wants to know who, you know, is requesting a concealed carry permit, and goes through a you know, a whole background check and everything.
We do all that. We have to do an interview there at the sheriff's office and all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Right. And I think that's a good thing.
But because it's my Second Amendment right is a good enough reason to apply, and it isn't in your county.
No, if you come in there and you fill out the DOJ form, and in Section 7, what is your reason, and you put down it's my Second Amendment right, they're going to reject it right now.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Period. You know, just, it's a judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and why do you think you need this? And we have a very, very good lieutenant here who knows how to interview people and kind of dig down. And, you know, there are questions about the family situation, background, military, you know, and because the sheriff's putting his signature on that thing.
Sure.
You know, and he doesn't need, pardon the pun, the blowback.
Right. No. Not a lot of people with concealed carry permits are out there committing crimes or killing people. I don't know if there have ever even been any.
No. If you go to the FBI's website, and again, FBI.gov, and you go into their statistics section in there, there is not one single record on file of anybody who has had a concealed carry permit committing a crime.
Not surprising.
Nothing. Absolutely. Well, you've got to be more responsible.
Well, you do. You have to be totally responsible as to who you're, you know, administering these permits to. But you go into an area like the Bay Area in California, you know, San Francisco, Walnut Creek, San Jose, you are not going to get a concealed carry permit, period. I don't care if you're a bank teller or transporting money in the middle of the night, they won't give you one, and I disagree with that.
And yet 100% of your criminals have them.
Yeah. Yeah, so it really does depend on your sheriff. It absolutely depends on your sheriff, but...
What do you say? We only have like a minute left, but I've always recommended that people go through the concealed weapons training, just because it's really good training. Whether or not you want the permit, if you own a firearm, that's a really good way to get some training.
Well, I do that, as a matter of fact, for the department in this county. You are right. And I do stuff through the NRA, of course, as a training counselor. We have a program called Personal Protection Outside the Home. And that's specifically a course for CCW holders. But it's a good course, you know, like you said, either way. There's the prerequisite course to that, by the way, is personal protection inside the home, which is really good because then it tells everybody the laws and everything else involved.
Right. And you've got to know that if you're going to carry a weapon, you've got to know when
Absolutely.
And where and how. And
alrighty, we will be right back with our guest Peter Friedman. We will be talking about the refugee crisis in the next hour. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.